All right, guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I am your host, founder, and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino. And today with us, we have Jeremy Mashuga, which I know I said that correctly. Yep. And if you Google his name, Mashuga, you will find out that he's got quite the history of being somebody who is no stranger to bravery. So, Jeremy, welcome to the podcast. I appreciate your time today, and you're going to see the value that we'll bring to others who are listening to this podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So do me a favor. I think the best place to start where we usually start is to give us a little history of yourself. And I certainly think you should 100% include your military career.
All right. Well, I was born and raised in Minnesota, graduated high school up there. As soon as I graduated, I left for the Army. I joined the Army, as quick as I could. I joined as a cavalry scout and, initially got stationed in Texas, in Fort Hood. From there, I deployed to Iraq, my first deployment. When I got back from Iraq, I moved to Kentucky. Spent several years there. From there, I deployed to another tour to Iraq and one more to Afghanistan.
Well, dude, I just want to jump in here and say, like, first of all, two things that I'm observing. One is I've been to Minnesota. Now I know why you don't want to go back. Number two is on behalf of everybody, thank you very much for your service. I often try to put myself in the position of somebody who has to get deployed to a tour of duty. And I've got to tell you, I can't imagine what it must feel like to go through that. So on behalf of myself and everybody, thank you for that. And that you hear it a lot, but I really genuinely mean it. Okay, carry on. Kentucky, we're back in Kentucky. Yeehaw.
So when I got back from Afghanistan, I got moved to Georgia, which is where I live now. From there, I got out of the Army. And at that point, I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. It wasn't getting into law enforcement. Wasn't something I always thought about, but it just kind of popped into my mind one day. And I used my GI Bill to send myself through the academy. Once I did that, I joined I was hired right out of the academy in a small little police department in middle Georgia, Centerville Police Department, kind of in middle Georgia. It's pretty close to the center.
So that's, so Centerville's where the incident that we're going to discuss unfolded, correct?
Yep.
So let's go right into that. Let's paint a picture of what time of day, when it was, what exactly occurred. But before I go into that, do you think that the previous training you had in the military helped you during the situation?
I think it helped keep me calm during it all, where I didn't get that worked up with it. You know, it's a lot going on. It was lots of process, but it was, it definitely helped with it in the end.
Okay. So when you went to work that day, was there any, and I ask this question every single time, was there any weird pit in your stomach or a weird feeling in the air?
No, it was just a normal night. I was actually working overtime. It wasn't my shift to work. I went in there, we start, 6 p.m., go in there for roll call. There's only two of us working on a shift. It's a small little city, very, lack of better term, very quiet little city. It was just normal night.
So generally, this part of Georgia is, I would assume, to be rural as well, correct?
It's pretty, where I was at, it's pretty built up. The city I worked in was kind of wrapped around by another city. So there's another bigger city, and that city is a lot busier, and it's very big.
So walk us through what happened that evening.
No, I got a call, I guess it's about closer to 10 o'clock at night, for a verbal domestic. At that time, my partner was tied up on another call, on the other side of the city, which, I mean, like I said, a small city. He wasn't too far away. So I was kind of rushing to get there. It was, like I said, it wasn't because of the call, but I was I've been working some traffic and was having some fun out in my normal spot. And so I wanted to go get this call done with and be done with it. So when I started driving there, they just came out, you know, it was a third party call. Male and female were arguing in front of the residence. I pulled up on scene. I kind of parked around the corner. I was a good distance away from my house. I wasn't exactly sure where the house was, so I parked a good distance and walked in. I walked up to the house. I mean, it was quiet. There's no noise coming from the house. Lights were on inside the house, but I went up to the front door, couldn't hear nothing. Knocked on the door. I actually had to step back off of the, because it was like stairs going up to the door. It's kind of an inlet door, so I backed away from the door to get out of that area. And a female came out, the garage door started open, which was just to the right of the door. Female came out the door, and I asked her what was going on. She said, you know, nothing, he just needs to go sleep it off. And so I asked what was going on. At that time, the front door opened up, and there was a male up there. I just told him I identified myself and said, hey, bud, just step down here and talk to me so we can figure out what's going on. At that time, she was still in the garage. She, out of the corner of my eye, I could see that she had bent over to pick something up. So I took my attention off of him to look at her to see what she was picking up. And at that time, you know, I took it off maybe a couple seconds. It didn't feel very long. When I looked back at him, he had his hand outstretched with a handgun already pointed right at me. So when I looked back at him, I saw that. I tried drawing. Before I could draw, he fired the first round, which struck me in the stomach right below the vest.
Jesus Christ.
You know, it. When it hit me, I knew exactly what happened. You know, I saw it. I felt it. I mean, I was looking right at him when he did it. But, you know, he when it hit, it kind of spun me around, and I ended up on my hands and knees with my back turned towards him. So I got my gun out the rest of the way, looked behind me. At that time, all I saw was him run through the front door and shut the door. At that time, right as soon as that first round was fired, my partner had arrived back on scene. I didn't know. At that time, I didn't even know he was there. You know, when I got my gun out, I looked behind me, saw him run in. I got back on my feet, and when I looked up, I saw his vehicle, which worked out well. He actually parked in front of the residence. So I had some cover to get to, or else we wouldn't have anything around. So I ran to his vehicle and took a knee back behind his vehicle to kind of assess what was going on.
Were you able to get any radio communications out at this point?
My partner got the shots fired to call out. I haven't said anything at that point. As soon as I realized that, once I got behind the vehicle, that's when I started talking on the radio. I told him that I'd been hit once in the stomach. My partner met me behind the vehicle, and the female stayed up in front of the residence.
What was her response? What was she doing?
So she, my partner started yelling at her to get away from the house to come to us. And she again said he just needs to sleep it off.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So that kind of, I'm a little bit hard of hearing. So I asked my partner what she said because I didn't hear because my partner said something along the lines like, are you fucking kidding me? And so I didn't hear what she said. So I asked him, I said, what'd she say? She said, he just needs to sleep it off. And at that point, like, I mean, I wasn't too worried about what was being said. So at that time, like I said, I got on the radio, started saying, tell them that I've been hit, you know, and it was in my stomach below my vest. We lost sight of everything. The lights started going off in the house. The garage door shut. He reached out and shut the garage door. My partner didn't know where he went. And I told him, I said, he ran back inside the house. So we're waiting for more back because, like I said, it was just us. Me and him were the only ones in the city. So we're waiting for the sheriff's office and the local police department that was right next door to us. They were en route with more help. It was only it's only several minutes. I mean, it wasn't long at all before the first officer that arrived back. I've seen who was actually he's a good friend of mine now. He arrives on scene and he's actually an Army medic. So he had quite a bit of medical training. He arrived on scene kind of trying to get the scope of what was going on, what happened. You know, after the fact, we learned that all dispatch told everybody was that I'd been hit. So they didn't know if I'd been hit by a car, if I'd been shot. They just didn't know what they were coming into. So when he arrived, he realized that I've been shot, kind of checked me out real quick in the stomach. And, they tried getting the female back out away from my house. She said,
at some point, was anybody taking like an initiative to get you out of there and get you to a facility?
It did. It took a few minutes. I mean, we were kind of in a really bad spot. We had one vehicle that was the only cover we had in the area. It was kind of we're in a neighborhood, but there was nowhere else to go. They were yelling with the female, trying to get her out of there, trying to figure out where he was. We had, you know, trying to figure out if he ran to the back of the house, you know, out the back. You know, they're trying to get a perimeter set up as more and more officers came in. A short time later, he ended up going up to the second floor window and opened fire again. At this time, that's when I was shot the second time in the foot.
Wow, he hit you a second time of all fucking people to get hit the second time it was you?
Yeah, and the weird part is, like, he had the back of the vehicle, and I was at by the license plate. And to my right front was one officer. Kind of right next to me leaning up against him, was another officer. So all three of us were right all in a very small area.
Could you fucking imagine, dude, the luck of getting hit so randomly the second time?
Well, you know, he fired, I can't remember how many rounds he fired. He hit the vehicle several times and then hit my foot. And I stepped back a little bit. And like I said, I was still on knees, so I scooted back a little bit more. And the officer, his name's Trey Thomas, he spotted where he was shooting from and returned fire, and his rifle ended up jamming.
Oh, Christ. Well, does he know how the rifle jammed?
No, I don't recall. I know we've talked about it, but I don't remember what he said caused it. You know, like I said, he was actually... He's one of the guys. He was an Army medic. He's on the SWAT team on the Manchester Police Department. You know, he was very well trained. So, but like I said, he got several rounds off. I think he got about four rounds off, and it stopped. So, at that point, we had more officers on scene. We had more deputies from the sheriff's office on scene. That's when they started making a decision how to get me out of there. At the vehicle at that point, we had me, my partner, Trey Thomas, and a Corporal Johnson from the Houston County Sheriff's Office. We're at the vehicle. From at that point, they made the decision to, my partner, Officer Wilcox, was going to load me up in his vehicle and get me out of that area. And Corporal Johnson, Trey Thomas would go find cover and stay on scene, obviously. So like I said, we're right in front of the vehicle. We had Tahoes at that time. So they started, like, I could move, I could walk. I needed some help getting up, you know, it's starting to hurt quite a bit. So they started getting me loaded up, get in the back seat. Once they got me loaded up, we took off for, towards the hospital. We actually passed the ambulance once we got out of the subdivision. The ambulance was just pulling up to several blocks away, obviously. We passed them, and Wilcox said, "Hey, I'm going to go to the hospital." Well, in that area, we have a hospital that's right down the road, but they're not a trauma hospital.
Right.
It's not one that could treat us. So dispatch was getting with my partner saying, "Hey, just stop, you know, let the ambulance take me, gotta go up to another city." So they finally stopped, they exchanged me over into the ambulance, and then I go to the hospital. up to the trauma center.
How far was the trauma center? How far of a ride?
It was probably about 15, 20 minutes, if I remember.
Like an eternity, brother, right?
Oh, yeah. It felt forever. So.
Yeah, Jesus.
But, you know, in the back of my head, you know, like I said, the pain wasn't, it hurt, but it wasn't unbearable. Like, I knew they gave me a little bit of morphine, you know, and moved me up there, but I really wasn't in that much pain.
What happened at the hospital?
As soon as they wheeled me in there, you know, they started stripping me of all my gear, taking my vest off, taking my boot off. At that point, they hadn't even taken my boot off yet because they didn't know how bad I was bleeding. They wanted to leave it laced up. So that's the first time I got to look at my foot, and, you know, it was just a small little hole in the top of my foot, and I couldn't see my stomach. Every time I sat up, it hurt, so I wouldn't look at it. You know, they told me, they're like, hey, we're going to take you right back to surgery. And I was like, okay, you know. And, you know, I remember at one point this nurse leaned over me, if we don't, you're going to die. And I'm like, okay, I'm not arguing with you about taking me into surgery. You know, I don't care. You know, do what you got to do. So they went down to surgery. I came out a couple hours later. You know, they told me what they did. You know, I wasn't, you know, it was kind of blurry at first, you know, fuzzy, but, you know, and then my chief came back to me and I asked him if they got the guy. He said, no, he barricaded himself in the house. It's still ongoing. I'm like, okay. So I ended up staying awake through the night. And my chief kept bringing me updates about the situation out there. You know, it turned into, I think, about a six or eight hour standoff, and he kept shooting at other.
Wow.
I ended up calling our the sheriff's office, SWAT team out there to handle the situation. And he fired throughout the night at guys out on the perimeter and everything.
Nobody else was struck, though, right?
Nobody else got struck. No.
Thank God. Thank God.
So, you know, I don't remember exactly when it was the next morning, about 6 or 7 in the morning. They ended up, our GBI, the Georgia Bureau of Investigations, ended up using a robot to breach the door, and sent the robot into the house, couldn't find the guy. So SWAT team went in, couldn't find him. They finally found him. He was hiding up in the attic where he gave up, and they took him into custody. So that morning, like I said, they came and told me they got him, that he'd been, you know, that he had some injuries, but he got shot once in the hand. You know, just me personally, nobody could ever figure out who actually hit him in the hand. But I honestly think it was Trey Thomas, because for a while there, he was quiet after Trey Thomas had fired back at him initially.
What happened with the girl? It was his girlfriend, his wife?
So, yeah, I think it was his girlfriend. They ended up having to go up there with a bear cat to extract her out. She wouldn't leave. So a SWAT team went up there to, in an armored vehicle to get her out of there.
Was she charged with anything?
No, she was not. So there was a lot of talk about it, if they were going to charge her. GBI ended up taking over the investigation, obviously. But yeah, she wasn't charged with anything.
Do you think she should have been charged with something?
She was drunk. So was he, from what I understand. I mean, really, there wasn't a whole lot to charge her with other than some BS misdemeanor charge, you know. It wouldn't have done a whole lot. So, yeah, I'm fine with it. How it all turned out.
And eventually, yeah, it seems like it went pretty quickly. He found himself in a courtroom and got sentenced to a pretty hefty sentence, huh?
Yeah, he got, I think it was 100 years he pled guilty, you know, and it was funny because initially the DA's office contacted me and said, hey, we want to offer him a plea deal. What do you think? And I told him, I said, you know, I'm fine with that. I said, but there's a heck of a lot more other law enforcement officers you got to check with that were involved in this. I said, you can't just go off of what I want. So I guess they checked around. They all said, you know, whatever, if Pashuga wants that, you know, do what he wants. So they offered him a plea deal. I think originally, I think it was 60 years or 60 or 80 years, something like that. And he said, no. He said, I don't want to take that. He's like, I didn't do much wrong. I only shot one cop.
Wow.
So at that
wrong point, state.
Yeah. And so at that point, I was kind of like, okay, you know, let's go to trial. Let's get this, you know, see what all we can get. And right before trial, I think we had a trial date set. They came back up to me again and said, hey, we might want to try this one more time. And I said, okay, you know, whatever y'all think. He's like, well, we're going to offer him 100 years. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, he's not going
to. Well, why would he take a plea of 100 years and not go to trial?
I think he probably was beginning to realize that he could face a lot more than that. But
what's the difference? You're not going to outlive it.
Exactly. I mean, he was already 46 at the time of the shooting. I mean, he wasn't going to survive it anyways. But I don't know why he took that one. I mean, why he didn't try to, struggle with it. But he stayed with it. He took that. And he took the plea deal, and then right after appealed it and tried to bring it up to
the appellate division.
Yep. And trying to appeal it. And, obviously they upheld everything. So,
it's over for him.
Yeah. So he's sitting down here in South Georgia in prison.
Not a fun place to be in prison. That's for sure.
Nope. So not really something I think about a whole lot, but every once in a while I'll just kind of pull up to see if he's moved prisons or anything like that. But.
What kind of damage did you sustain?
So the wound to the stomach, they ended up having to take out some of my intestine. They cut it all out.
Jesus Christ.
I think it nicked some other, they didn't nick anything or didn't hit anything vital, obviously. But it hit right below my belly button. And, pretty much just damaged all my intestines. And they took, I can't remember, I think they said they took about 6 inches or a foot out of my intestine.
Jesus Christ.
My foot, it went in right off the top of my foot and came out, or it stopped right underneath the skin of my heel. But miraculously, it didn't break any bones. I don't know how it did that without breaking bones. The next day, it wasn't until, let's see, that was Friday night, Saturday morning, they finally took the bullet out of my foot. But no broken bones there. But that's the one that hurt more than the stomach. My foot wound hurt the worst. So,
what, did you have to go to rehab after this at all? Or what's your follow-up now? What do you live with now as far as pain?
So, I mean, my stomach, I have a little bit of digestive problems, it's nothing like, I'm still back at work 100%, my foot, I can't feel the top of my foot, between my ankle to my toes. I feel
nerve damage.
That's about it. But I mean, considering everything that happened, I was only out of work 4 months. And I would have been back a lot sooner than that, but I ended up, after being sitting around in the hospital for so long, I ended up getting a blood clot in my leg, and then that broke off and went into my lung.
Jesus.
So we had to say I was on blood thinners, so I couldn't go back to work. And, which my department took pretty good care of me. They let me come back on light duty. We really didn't have anything to do for light duty, but they're like, hey, and I told them, I said, I really want to come back to work and do something to get out of the house. So I went back there and, I just did whatever they wanted me to do, which was a whole lot. So, but it was just good to be back around that lifestyle again.
Has the shooting had any psychological impacts on you at all that maybe you can offer some insight to other people? Anything you went through that might help others face a similar dilemma?
I had a good, when I went back to work, I had a good sergeant. They were going to put me right back on night shifts, and he kind of took me under his wing. He had been involved in a shooting, I think about 2 years before that, where two deputies were killed. And he kind of took me under his wing, and, he said, hey, put him back on day shift, let him get his feet wet, and me and him talked a lot. Like I said, he took me under his wing. When I went back to nights, that was kind of a little bit different. Start playing a little bit more on my mind. And then the hardest part was, and even now to this day, I'll go into that in a little bit, but on my 1 year anniversary, I was actually working, and I got a call right in that same area. right next to where it had happened for another domestic. And so in the back of my mind, that's all that I'm thinking about. You know, I'm looking at this house where I've been shot at, and another one that's just like this one. That kind of messed with me a little bit. You know, afterwards, I could tell my adrenaline had been up during the whole time. And then, obviously, it ended up being nothing, but that messed with me quite a bit afterwards, where it took me a while to kind of come down off of that. And, you know, nowadays, I still have those, you know, going on calls. You know, I still work patrol. Going up on calls are similar to that, or, you know, coming up to houses where, you know, it's me all alone, you know, which is normal for everybody, you know, just in the back of my mind, that's all I'm thinking about. And, but I've learned that, you know, if you just push through it, as it keeps going, I mean, my shooting's been 3 years already, but if you just keep pushing, it'll get better with time. And don't dwell on it.
I think that, you know, do you think at any point that it might have been a good idea to have some kind of, at least an opportunity to speak with somebody in a therapeutic session?
Yeah, I mean, I went and talked to somebody, a professional, and she pretty much told me to go get a hobby.
So she was a real professional. Good for her.
Yeah, so I got told to go get a hobby.
That's good.
That didn't really help me at all.
Well, no, and that's, you know, we are working on things here to try to formulate a better support system for police officers overall to avoid. I just talked to a guy last week who's, you know, needs to talk to somebody. And I'm going to leave it at that. And he said, the last person I talked to was some liberal anti-cop, person. We've talked about this before in podcasts, but I just want to forewarn people that if you find yourself in a situation where the person you're assigned to speak with is not somebody who is empathetic to your situation, or appears to have some kind of animosity towards you, it's probably time to find a new person to employ.
Yeah, you know, and right after my shooting, I got contacted by, and you know, to this day, I still can't remember his name. And we talked for, he would call me and talk on the phone, but I think he was with the GBI at that point. And he had been involved in a shooting where he was shot 5 times.
My God.
Kid. And, so he talked to me. He told me, so when you go back to work, this is some of the stuff that I dealt with. This is, you know, this will help you. And then he also got me in line. There was it was kind of like a peer group thing where they were meeting in, I think it was South Carolina, where me and my partner that night who was working, my department sent both of us up there. I think we're up there for a week. And, you know, they did like group meetings and you meet one-on-one with a counselor and, you know, that helped quite a bit. I mean, that kind of, to me, that setting kind of reminded me of some stuff that they did in the Army, and which I never took serious. This one I took kind of serious, but at the same time, I wasn't like, I guess I started worrying about that stigma that, hey, if I have a problem, I'm not going to be a cop anymore, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I didn't get the full effects of it, you know. But it did help out.
Yeah, I think that people need to recognize that getting help is an important thing. You find yourself in a situation, and one that was presented to you, you didn't even ask for it.
Yeah.
I mean, and although you may not have needed it in the past, times have changed, dynamics have changed, and you're in a situation in your life where you may need to speak with somebody. And I say that to encourage others to seek help, because the last thing you want to see is a police officer take his or her own life when there was a better option. And I want to remind everybody that your decision to do something like that doesn't impact just you. You're going to leave everybody that's ever known you in pain for the rest of their lives. So although you may think it's a selfless act, it's actually a very selfish act. Mm-hmm. And I am very empathetic to the point where somebody gets that they are prepared to take their life.
Yeah.
Because I got to tell you, I don't know if I'll ever be in that position. Knock on wood, hopefully I won't be, but I can't imagine the pain somebody must be in dealing with something like that, to have to be sitting there even contemplating the decision. And there are better routes and alternatives to take than to do something like that.
Yeah.
Is there anything you thought you could have done better, or any training that you would have suggested that could have helped this situation at all?
You know, I mean, the only thing I look at kind of now that I still look back on that bugged me is how it spiraled out of control, you know, where it, you know, my one thing that I haven't really ever been able to work past is if I could have stayed on my feet, I could have ended that situation right there. Instead, I put all these other deputies and officers at risk, you know, for a situation that could have been ended right there. That always really kind of bugged me.
Have you had any resolution with that at all? That still bugs you?
No, I mean, it's been a while. Like, it's as the years go on, it's starting to kind of fade more and more.
Like a broken heart of a girlfriend thought you were going to marry. Let me just say something real quick. You weren't presented with that situation because you chose to be presented with that situation. The only thing you did show up to serve the community, probably for in Georgia, pennies on the dollar for what we make up here in New Jersey or California or New York. Now, this is a tough situation for anybody to face. I don't care who the fuck people think they are. Until you're shot, to try to cast judgment on somebody else for what they could have done or should have done is a horrible place to be. So you have to stop casting judgment on yourself for that night, dude, and make peace with it. I get you're making more peace with it, but on top of it, I've got a funny feeling in your 6-week academies in Georgia that did not prepare you mentally or trained you physically to what to do in this encounter or situation. I just know that even if you went to an academy for 24 weeks, I know you're not getting the training you need in order to be able to do something like this. So, you got to focus on making peace with that. As soon as I hear that, I say to myself, that had nothing to do with you. That wasn't your fault at all. And 97% of us would have done the same exact thing, probably even more than that. So I can't imagine the trauma of being shot. And do you have other things to think about? You had that other woman there. There's a lot of reasons. And by the way, guess what? You're playing the what could have happened, but it didn't. And it's over and it's resolved. All these people survived, bad guys, you know, in custody. And he'll never be a menace to society ever again. So, dude, you know, you survived. I think you did a very good job. You guys did what you had to do. You probably got the SWAT guys all excited.
Yeah.
Right? The other guy got to fire 4 rounds into the house. That's a good time.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing is, like, I ended up joining because my PD didn't have a SWAT team. So I ended up joining the county SWAT team. And, you know, that was something they still taught. Like, I joined it, I think, about a year later. And that's something they still talk about. And they still talk, hey, man, your incident, you know, that was, you know, this is what we did. This is how it worked for us. You know,
how about this, dude? Like, you get to tell this story now. You get to tell what you could have done differently. And then you also get to, you know, we now know what to do in your area. So as nuts as it sounds, it probably unfolded the way it did for a reason. You just got to make peace with that.
Yeah.
Listen, there are many variables in life that we want to sit here and go back. I mean, cops are historically known for saying, oh, if I could have just done it differently.
Yeah.
Oh, he got away with it this time. He won't get away with it. You know, listen, that's how we all learn. You know, now you're running scenarios through your head probably nonstop of what you're going to do in what situation. And, you know, I think that's another lesson that's good for everybody here is take it from Jeremy's mouth to your ears that you should be playing the what if scenarios in your mind consistently to know exactly what you're going to do if something like that happens. So you heard his story. You can now have a little more caution when you approach a situation like a domestic violence, even though it's a verbal, it went from a verbal to something very dangerous very quickly. And there's a lot of lessons to be taken from here. And, you know, make the rational inferences that you must or may. But dude, even taking time right now to share your story with all these people, it's tremendously valuable. I mean, it's tremendously valuable. I mean, you can't put a price on getting to hear what somebody went through firsthand in a situation that we all think about every single day. So, brother, like, you did a great job. You know what I mean? You're here, you're alive. I see you got a wedding ring on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You found somebody crazy enough to marry your ass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you have children now, too?
Yeah, I've got children from previous marriage. So.
Well, you're in the military, so you probably have 15 of them, right?
Yeah.
And the good news is that you have traded in your Minnesota accent for a Georgia accent.
Yep. Well, at this point now, I've kind of lived in the South longer than the North, so...
That's good, man. It's a far better accent and cooler accent to have than the... Oh, don't you know there? Oh, no, yeah, okay, yeah, okay, yeah. You know,
every time I talk to somebody up there, I kind of giggle at them now. So,
I have a lot of love for the people. We have got a lot of love out of Minnesota, so I'm only razzing all of you. But your accents are horrendous. They are the worst. You know, I told guys when they're coming to our conference, I said, if you guys think you're going to hook up when you come here, just don't even talk.
Yeah.
You better just lift weights and show up and don't say it. If a girl says hello, you just go, hmm. Because nobody wants to hear, oh, nice to meet you there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's like I said, I go home about once a year, trying to go home about once a year to visit my parents. And every time I go up there, it's pretty bad.
How old are you now?
I'm 37 now.
So what part of Minnesota did you grow up in?
I kind of moved around a little bit. So in Cambridge, kind of a central area in Minnesota, north of the Minneapolis and
south of, was it the great fucking something up there? Grand Forks? What the fuck is up there?
Grand Forks is, yeah, that's way, way up north. I kind of grew up in the middle. I mean, it wasn't really kind of on the Wisconsin side.
Okay. Do you miss cheese curds?
I do. You know,
I'm going to tell you something. I had an experience with cheese curds about 18 months ago, and that was the last experience I'll have with cheese curds because I got to tell you, that sat in my stomach for about 11 days.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just praying for the Lord to let me have a bowel movement.
Yep. Yeah.
That shit will bind you the fuck up nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It'll jack you up.
Oh, bro. And people are like, oh, you got to have the cheese curds when you're here. fuck your cheese curds. How about that? No offense to the people from the North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin area, but oh, no siree, Bob.
I can't eat those anymore. Like growing up, they never bothered me. But now since I've left and gone up there, then I'll eat them again. It don't sit well with me.
Yeah, dude, Georgia's a great state, by the way, too. I mean, it's really one of my favorite states in the union. It's a great state.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's a reason why I'm still here in Georgia. I like it here. So
oh, it's
I
cool,
actually
man.
Live now up in the mountains of Georgia, so I love it.
That's awesome, dude. Solidarity is interesting as you get older.
Oh, yeah.
You want to be just by yourself, you know?
Yep.
I have neighbors that are close enough, but far enough, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. That's how it is where I'm at right now. I really don't have any neighbors at all. So.
Well, I have my neighbors. They're just, let's put it this way. I can comfortably go into my backyard in my underwear and they may see me, but they don't really see much.
Yep, exactly.
And that's not because I have some Irish blood either. I'm not saying that. Yeah. So, dude, did you join our Facebook group for Street Cop Survivors?
Yes, I'm on there.
Okay, cool. Great.
Yeah.
And how's that going for you guys?
It's going good. You know, and we just had she got shot a few weeks ago now, where she ended up passing away, but they were starting to bring up about going to talk to her and, you know, all that.
Oh, the woman, right? The 49-year-old woman?
Mm-hmm. So, that was one county down from where I work now. So,
Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to try to, been speaking with a few guys from the group who are kind of taking charge a little bit, and I'm going to try to give guidance when I can in that group. And, you know, obviously I have a lot going on and I'm trying to use my time sparingly. As a matter of fact, I've had to forfeit some other things to what I consider to be focused on some things that deserve a little more focus. And that's one of them. So we're working on stuff, man. It's a little bit at a time. And I thought about this today. I'm like, just, you know, we did a podcast the other day with a guy from Irvington, New Jersey, who was shot in line of duty. And, you know, he said that group has been so much better for him than anything he's gotten so far. And it just took somebody making a decision to say, you know what, let's put a group together. And, you know, just that it exists is enough right now.
Yeah.
And
just having somebody that you're available to talk to that's been in the same situation as you, you know, it definitely helped. You know, I haven't really been around any other law enforcement that's been, you know, I've been around them that they've been shooting where they've shot, you know, but as far as being actually shot and surviving and all that, it's not something that's an everyday thing that you run into. So it's kind of nice having that group available.
Yeah, that's good, man. I'm glad that we got to get that rolling out of Atlantic City, and that was good. So is there anything else you want to add before we wrap this up, Jer?
No, I mean, it's everybody stay careful there. Keep your heads up. I mean, it's a very dangerous thing we do.
I think that's a perfect place to leave off. So, man, I appreciate your time so much. I want to thank everybody for the continued support for the Street Cop Training Podcast. Check out all of our training products at streetcop.com. Join our Facebook group. Follow us on Instagram. We're all over the place. You'd be surprised where we're showing up and doing some training, but I appreciate you, man. Thank you for your time. And
thank you.
You ever need anything, you know where to reach out.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, brother. Good seeing you.